Welcome to our deep dive into the fascinating world of large language models.
LLMs.
LLMs, exactly.
Yeah.
These AI systems that can write and translate and even seem to think.
Right.
We're going to unpack some academic papers and excerpts that you've shared with us to really understand how they work.
Yeah.
And they're revolutionizing so much from just searching for information.
Yeah.
To how economists like yourself analyze data.
Absolutely.
I mean, we're even going to touch on how these LLMs could potentially help you
sure.
predict housing prices or make traffic flow smoothly.
Yeah, it's really fascinating how quickly this field is evolving.
Yeah.
And to appreciate where we are right now, I think it's really helpful to look back and see where it all began. Mm. The early language models relied on these very rigid rule-based systems.
Okay.
But actually programming a computer to grasp every nuance of language, like sarcasm, proved incredibly challenging.
So those early systems were kind of like trying to fit a square peg in a round hole.
Exactly. They really struggled with the inherent ambiguity and flexibility of human language.
Yeah.
And then came the rise of statistical methods.
Okay.
You had models like Enneagrams that used probabilities to try and predict word sequences.
Right.
Which was a big step forward, but these models still kind of stumbled when it came to capturing those long-range dependencies in language.
Okay, so the connections between words or phrases.
Yeah.
That are separated by a lot of other texts.
Right.
Could you give us an example of that in kind of an economic context?
Certainly. Imagine you're reading a report about a company's financial performance.
Okay.
The first sentence might mention the company's name,
mm-hmm.
but then several sentences later, a pronoun is used to refer back to that company.
Right.
A basic statistical model might actually struggle to connect those two elements.
Yeah.
Just because they're so far apart in the text.
Yeah.
So they're lacking that longer term memory.
I see. So it's like trying to analyze a complex economic trend without considering all the historical factors that led up to it. You'd miss the bigger picture.
Precisely.
Okay.
And that's where these neural networks came in.
Mm.
They introduced the power of vector representations for words.
Okay.
Word2vec, for instance, really marked a turning point.
Yeah.
It could analyze these huge data sets and understand that king is to queen as man is to woman.
Wow.
It was capturing the semantic relationships between words based on how they co-occur in language.
So instead of just seeing words as individual units,
yeah.
these networks started understanding the underlying meaning and relationships between them.
Right.
That's pretty remarkable.
Indeed, it really set the stage for the even more powerful models that we see today.
Yeah.
But before we get into those, I think it's important to talk about the engine driving these language models, machine learning.
Okay, let's break it down then. How does machine learning actually enable computers to learn from data?
Well, at its core, machine learning is all about empowering computers to learn from data without explicit programming. Think of it as giving them tools to figure things out on their own,
mm-hmm.
rather than giving them a strict set of rules to follow.
So instead of programming every single step,
right.
we're giving these machines the ability to adapt and learn from their experiences.
Exactly. And there are three main ways they do this. Supervised, unsupervised, and reinforcement learning.
Okay.
Each is like a different teaching style for AI students.
I like that analogy.
Yeah.
Can you give us some examples of how these different teaching styles might apply in an economic context?
Sure. Supervised learning is like giving the AI a set of labeled data.
Okay.
Let's say historical data on interest rates and GDP growth.
Mm-hmm.
The AI would then learn the relationship between those variables.
Right.
And could use that knowledge to predict future GDP growth based on current interest rate trends.
So it's essentially learning from past examples to make informed predictions about the future.
Exactly.
Okay, what about unsupervised learning? How would that apply?
Unsupervised learning is more about pattern recognition. Imagine giving the AI a data set of consumer spending habits.
Okay.
But without any specific labels,
mm-hmm.
the AI could then cluster consumers with similar spending patterns.
Yeah.
And this could reveal valuable insights for targeted marketing or understanding broader economic trends.
That makes sense. It's like finding those hidden connections in a sea of data.
Yeah.
So where does reinforcement learning fit into all of this?
Reinforcement learning is about setting a goal.
Okay.
And letting the AI learn through trial and error.
Mm-hmm.
Take optimizing traffic flow in a city.
Okay.
The AI could experiment with different traffic light timings.
Yeah.
And learn which settings minimize congestion based on the feedback it receives.
Right.
Like real-time traffic data.
So it's like a continuous learning process where the AI gets better and better over time.
Right.
Based on the consequences of its actions.
Precisely.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the softmax function earlier.
Yeah.
I'm curious, how does the softmax function help AI make more informed decisions.
Well, imagine you have an economic forecasting model.
Okay.
That considers various factors like inflation, unemployment, consumer confidence.
Mm-hmm.
The model assigns these raw scores to different potential outcomes.
Right.
And the softmax function takes those scores.
Okay.
And transforms them into probabilities.
So it's adding a level of nuance to the decision-making process, considering the likelihood of different outcomes,
exactly,
rather than just picking the one with the highest score.
Precisely. This probabilistic approach allows for more sophisticated and human-like behavior in AI systems, making them less rigid and more adaptable to uncertain situations.
This is fascinating. We've covered a lot of ground already, from the evolution of language models to the power of machine learning.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm eager to kind of delve deeper into the brains behind LLMs, these incredible neural networks.
Let's do it.
So we talked about machine learning as like the engine, mm-hmm, but now let's look under the hood at the brains of LLMs, these neural networks.
I mean, it's kind of mind-boggling to me that we can actually, like, build systems.
It is remarkable.
Yet mimic the human brain.
And just like our brains have these specialized areas,
right,
there are different types of neural networks,
okay,
each with its own strengths.
Okay.
One type is what's called a feed-forward network.
Okay.
Information in a feed-forward network flows in one direction,
okay,
from input to output.
Mm-hmm.
Think of it like a chain reaction,
okay,
where each step leads to the next.
Wouldn't that make them a bit too simplistic, though, for handling complex language?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
While they're the simplest type of neural network,
right,
they can be surprisingly powerful.
Okay.
In economics, for example, you might use a feed-forward network to model the relationship between variables like inflation and consumer spending.
Uh-huh.
The network learns from historical data and then uses that to try and predict future spending based on current inflation trends.
Okay, so it's about finding those patterns and connections between economic indicators to make informed forecasts.
Exactly.
Okay, what about like more complex tasks though?
Yeah.
Like image recognition, are feed-forward networks up to the challenge?
So for images, we turn to something called convolutional neural networks, CNNs.
CNN.
They're inspired by the human visual system.
Oh, wow.
Using filters to detect things like edges and shapes and patterns,
right,
just like our eyes process visual information.
Uh-huh.
CNNs break down images into their core components.
So they're like digital eyes helping AI understand the visual world around it.
Precisely.
Can you give us an example of how CNNs might be used in an economic context?
Absolutely. Satellite imagery is increasingly being used in economics these days.
Mm-hmm.
A CNN could analyze satellite images of agricultural fields to assess crop health, or even monitor deforestation, which could provide really valuable insights for commodity markets or environmental economics.
That's a great example.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've talked about networks that analyze kind of static data, like
mm-hmm,
images, but what about handling sequential information,
right,
like text or financial time series data?
Yeah, that's where recurrent neural networks or RNNs really shine.
RNNs.
They have a unique memory mechanism that allows them to process data in sequence, understanding how each element builds upon the previous one.
So unlike feedforward networks, RNNs can actually remember and consider past information when processing new data.
Exactly.
That seems super crucial for understanding like the flow of language or economic trends over time.
Precisely. And RNNs are particularly well suited for tasks like sentiment analysis in financial markets.
Okay.
They can analyze news articles or social media posts.
Interesting.
Not just for the individual words, but for the overall sentiment expressed over time.
Okay.
Really gauging market reactions and trends.
So it's like having an AI that can almost read the mood of the market.
Yeah, you could think of it that way.
Yeah. That's pretty impressive. But you mentioned earlier that transformers are kind of the powerhouse behind LLMs.
Yeah.
What makes them so different from these other networks that we've been talking about?
Well, transformers really revolutionized natural language processing with their unique self-attention mechanism.
Self-attention.
Yeah.
Okay.
Imagine you're trying to decipher a dense economic report.
Okay.
As you read, you naturally focus on certain keywords, right?
Yeah, numbers, connections between different ideas. You're kind of weighting their importance as you go.
Exactly. And self-attention allows LLMs to do something very similar.
So instead of processing information linearly like these other networks,
mm-hmm,
they can kind of selectively focus on the most relevant parts.
Exactly. It's like having a team of analysts all highlighting the most crucial points in the report
All
and
right.
then combining their insights to form a cohesive understanding.
So it's not just about remembering past information, then. It's also about understanding how different pieces of information relate to each other, no matter how far apart they might be in the text.
Exactly. And remember how we discussed the limitations of those early models,
Yeah?
struggling with those long-range dependencies?
Yeah, they couldn't quite connect the dots.
Right. Well, transformers excel in this area. For
Okay.
example, they can connect a pronoun back to its antecedent, even if they're separated by several paragraphs.
Okay.
Just like an economist would track the impact of a policy change across multiple economic indicators over time.
So that's a game changer for analyzing complex economic data
Yeah.
where those relationships between variables might not be immediately apparent.
Exactly.
But I'm curious if transformers don't process information in this strictly linear fashion, how do they account for the order of words,
Right.
which seems pretty crucial for understanding language?
That's a great point. And to address this, they use something called positional encoding.
Positional encoding.
Yeah, it's like assigning each word a unique identifier based on its position in a sentence. So this allows the model to understand the sequence of words while still leveraging the power of self-attention
Right.
to focus on those relationships between different words.
So it's like having a map of the sentence where each word has its specific coordinates.
Yeah, you could think of it that way.
Okay. But these transformers still need to be trained, right?
They do.
What are we actually teaching them to do?
That brings us to the crucial concept of training objectives.
Training objectives.
Yeah, these objectives are like setting specific goals for our AI students, if you will,
Right.
guiding them to learn particular tasks that are relevant to language understanding.
Can you give us an example of a training objective and how it would apply in an economic context?
Sure. One common objective is something called masked language modeling, or MLM.
MLM?
Yeah, we randomly mask out words in a sentence.
Okay.
And the model has to predict those missing words based on the context.
So it's like an economic puzzle where you have to fill in like the missing numbers in a table or chart.
Exactly. It's learning to understand the relationships between different economic indicators.
Okay. Are there other objectives that kind of help these LLMs develop a deeper understanding of language?
Absolutely. Another one is next sentence prediction, or NSP.
NSP. Okay.
The model is given two sentences
Okay.
and has to determine if the second sentence logically follows the first.
Oh, interesting.
This helps the AI grasp the flow of ideas and arguments, which is crucial for analyzing economic reports or policy documents, or even understanding the narratives behind market trends.
It's like teaching the AI to be like a critical reader, you
So
know,
exactly.
evaluating the logical consistency of economic arguments.
Precisely.
Okay. Are there any other training objectives that are particularly important for economics?
Well, causal language modeling, or CLM, is
CLM.
particularly relevant for tasks like generating economic forecasts or
Right.
policy recommendations.
Interesting.
The model learns to predict the next word in a sequence
Okay.
based on all the preceding word, understanding those cause and effect relationships in
Yeah.
different economic scenarios.
So it's like training the AI to think like an economist almost,
Right.
anticipating the consequences of economic events or policy decisions. This
Precisely.
is all incredibly insightful.
Good.
But training these sophisticated LLMs,
Yeah.
it must be a computationally demanding process.
Yeah.
What are some of the challenges involved?
You're absolutely right. Training these LLMs requires massive data sets
Right.
and significant computational power.
Yeah.
We're talking about training models with billions, even trillions of parameters.
Parameters, could you explain what those are
Sure.
and why so many are needed?
Think of parameters as like the knobs and dials that control the behavior of the neural network. They
Okay.
represent the connections between the different neurons. And essentially, the more parameters you have, the more complex and nuanced the relationships that the model can learn.
So to understand these intricate economic
Oh,
systems,
right.
we need models that can handle vast amounts of data and capture those subtle interactions between variables.
Precisely. And to handle that, we need a lot of parameters.
Okay, so it's like having a more detailed and sophisticated model of the economy
Exact.
with more variables and more connections between those variables.
Right.
That makes sense. But dealing with such massive amounts of data and computation, it must require some pretty specialized hardware and techniques.
Absolutely. We rely on very powerful hardware like GPUs and TPUs.
GPUs and TPUs?
These are specialized processors that are designed specifically for the parallel processing
okay.
that's required for deep learning.
Right.
Imagine trying to analyze millions of economic data points simultaneously.
Yeah.
These processors can handle that workload incredibly efficiently.
So they're like supercharged calculators,
yeah.
crunching numbers at lightning speed to help these LLMs learn.
That's a good analogy.
But even with that powerful hardware, wouldn't processing such vast data sets still take an enormous amount of time?
It would if we were using just a single computer. But that's where distributed training comes in.
Distributed training?
Instead of using a single computer,
oh.
we distribute the workload across multiple machines.
Oh, wow.
Sometimes even hundreds or thousands of them,
uh-huh.
all working together to train the model.
So it's like having a team of supercomputers all collaborating to solve a complex economic puzzle.
You got it.
But even with distributed training, there must be other challenges in optimizing this whole process.
Right.
Can you tell us about some of the techniques that are used to make training more efficient?
Sure. One very common technique is called stochastic gradient descent, or SGD.
SGD.
Instead of updating the model's parameters using the entire data set all at once,
okay,
which would be extremely computationally expensive,
right?
SGD updates them using small batches of data at a time.
Okay.
It's like taking small steps towards the solution.
Yeah.
Rather than trying to leap there all in one go.
So it's a more iterative approach,
mm-hmm.
kind of refining the model's understanding of the data step by step.
Excellent.
Are there other optimization techniques that kind of help speed up the training process?
Absolutely. You have more advanced optimizers like ADAM.
ADAM, okay.
Which adapt the learning rate for each parameter.
Okay.
Essentially fine-tuning the model's learning process.
So it's like having a personal trainer for the AI?
Yeah.
Adjusting the intensity of the workout for, like, optimal performance?
Precisely.
That's a great analogy. But mm-hmm. training these massive models?
Right.
It must also present unique challenges in terms of keeping the learning process stable and controlled?
Yeah.
Are there any techniques to address those challenges?
One common challenge is something called the exploding gradient problem.
Exploding gradient problem.
Where updates to the model's parameters become too large.
Okay.
And that leads to instability during training.
Mm-hmm.
So there are techniques like gradient clipping.
Okay.
That prevent those updates from getting out of hand.
Yeah.
And ensure a smoother training process.
So it's like having a safety mechanism that prevents the AI from making these like drastic changes that could derail its learning.
Right.
This has been incredibly insightful.
Yeah.
We've really explored the brains behind LLMs, from the different types of neural networks
yeah.
to the computational challenges of training these massive models.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm eager to hear about like the incredible abilities that emerge
right.
as these models scale up
yeah.
and the implications for a field like economics.
Let's get into it.
So we've explored the architecture and the training of LLMs, but now comes the really exciting part. What happens when these models get truly massive? What new abilities emerge?
It's not just that they get better at what we explicitly train them for.
Right.
It's that they start exhibiting entirely new capabilities.
Wow.
Almost as if they're developing their own way of thinking.
Okay.
One striking example is something called in-context learning.
In-context learning.
Imagine you give an LLM a few examples of translating financial news from English to German, but without explicitly training it for translation.
So just a few examples, not a whole training data set specifically for that task.
Exactly. Large LLMs can often pick up the pattern and start translating accurately.
Wow.
From just those few examples.
That's pretty impressive.
This ability to generalize from limited data is called few-shot learning.
Few-shot learning.
And it has huge implications for economists. Imagine analyzing a new economic trend with only a handful of data points
yeah.
or predicting market behavior based on just a few historical parallels.
It would certainly speed up research if we didn't need these massive data sets every time.
It would.
It's like being able to extrapolate from a small sample size with incredible accuracy.
Exactly.
Are there other examples of these emergent abilities that seem almost human-like?
Definitely. LLMs are even starting to display something called chain of thought reasoning.
Chain of thought reasoning?
They're breaking down complex problems into smaller, more manageable steps.
Okay.
Just as we do as humans.
Right.
Instead of just spitting out an answer, they seem to be actually thinking things through.
That's interesting. Could you give us an example of chain of thought reasoning in like an economic context?
Sure. Imagine asking an LLM to forecast the impact of a new trade agreement.
Okay.
Instead of just producing a single number.
Yeah.
It might first analyze the specific provisions of the agreement, then consider historical data on similar agreements, and finally factor in current economic conditions before arriving at its forecast.
I see.
It's a much more transparent and interpretable process,
right?
Which is crucial for building trust in these AI systems.
Yeah, especially when we're talking about complex economic decisions.
Exactly.
It's fascinating to think that these models are developing their own internal logic.
It is.
It makes their predictions less of a black box and more of a reasoned argument.
Right.
But surely there are limits to how far we can scale these models, right?
You're right. While we've seen amazing progress, scaling isn't a magic bullet.
Right.
We're already bumping up against computational limits.
Ah.
The resources needed to train these massive models grow exponentially with size.
So at some point it becomes like trying to power a city with a hamster wheel.
Precisely. And even if we could overcome those computational hurdles, there's also the issue of diminishing returns.
Okay.
We might see those performance gains start to level off as models get bigger.
Right. It's like trying to squeeze every last drop of juice from an orange.
Exactly.
At some point, you're just not going to get much more.
Right.
And of course, there's the environmental impact to consider.
Absolutely.
Training these models requires an incredible amount of energy.
It does.
We can't just ignore the sustainability aspect as we kind of push the boundaries of AI.
We can't, the computational resources, the energy consumption, even the data itself.
Yeah.
All of these factors require careful consideration.
Right.
As we delve deeper into the world of LLMs, we need to think critically about the trade-offs and ensure we're developing this technology responsibly.
This deep dive has been an incredible journey. We've learned about the evolution of language models, the inner workings of neural networks.
Mm-hmm.
And the awe-inspiring capabilities of LLMs.
Yeah.
We've even touched on the economic implications and the ethical considerations that come with this rapidly advancing technology.
Absolutely. And remember, this is just the beginning.
Right.
As LLMs continue to evolve, who knows what new emergent abilities will arise?
Yeah.
What new possibilities will they unlock in economics and beyond?
It's both exciting and a little bit daunting to think about.
It is.
But one thing is, certain LLMs are already having a profound impact on our world.
They are.
And that impact is only going to grow.
For sure.
We hope this deep dive has given you a solid foundation to explore further.
Yeah.
To ask those critical questions.
Mm-hmm.
And to consider how LLMs might shape your own work and understanding of the world.
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us on this journey, and keep diving deep.